Welcome to the Teaming Against Trauma podcast, brought to you by Dorchester Children's Advocacy Center. My name's Brooke Anderson, and I'm so grateful that you're here with us. We'll be talking about the way child advocacy professionals fight together against trauma and the effects that it has on children. My hope is that you'll gain a better understanding of the way the Child Advocacy Center model works and leave feeling inspired with ways and action steps that you can use to better understand trauma and prevent child abuse. This work truly takes a team to do. So now I'm considering you a part of ours. Welcome to the team. Now let's jump in. Welcome to the Summer of Survivors mini-series. In this episode, you're going to hear from one of the three courageous individuals who have chosen to share about their life's journey and the redemption and healing that they've experienced in the midst of growing up with childhood trauma. I've asked these individuals to not give too much detail about the abuse itself and to focus on how they've grown through it, what they've learned along the way, and how they want to use their voice to encourage others, because that is what makes their stories amazing. However, I do want to warn you that we may get into some discussions that have the potential to make you uncomfortable, especially if you're a survivor of childhood trauma yourself. So please know that my heart is truly to only recognize the darkness so that we can see and give appreciation for the hope and light that they've experienced even more. That being said, I want you to take care of yourself. So as you need, please proceed accordingly. At the end, we'll give resources for survivors and also include them in the show notes. And know that without a doubt, we'll always be on your team. So now let's jump in to the Summer of Survivors. Hi, Brad. Thank you so much for being here today. I'm super excited for our conversation.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So yeah, I just kind of want to jump right in. Could you tell us what you do now? I know you have a really awesome career, so I want to hear about that. And also, if you can share a fun fact about yourself.
Sure. So career-wise, I live in the production space. And that actually, for me personally, takes a few different forms. My biggest driver is independent film. And I started with short films. I'm currently developing my second feature film. And those have always focused on, they're more personal-driven, independent dramas. Pretty unconventional, fairly abstract. As my career progressed, I realized it was actually a means and a process of dealing with some of the other stuff that we're going to talk about. So That's one most creative-driven part of my career. I also do commercial production, and that ranges from 30-second spots to a lot of web content with nonprofits and brands and that sort of thing. And then I also do consulting work with the state of South Carolina focused on job training and career training and entrepreneurship. And those are interesting builds that have proven to be successful, and I really enjoy all of that. So
that's awesome. Yeah. Oh, I love that. Wow, I knew the film, but then there's more to it. So thanks for sharing that.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
And then a fun fact.
All right. Well, one thing that's interesting is I'm a big foosball player. Okay. And as is my wife. My wife actually grew up playing foosball in youth groups and that sort of thing. And when we met in college at UNC Chapel Hill, and we're big foosball players, and just recently bought a foosball table for our family. And fun. Now our three daughters have gotten very much into it and are pretty high grade. So at some point, we're going to take them into some, I want to say, bars or restaurants and maybe do a little sharking and see if we can't win some money that way. So
yeah. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I am not good at foosball, so I could take some practice rounds with you guys,
I'm sure. And that's just a joke, by the way. We're not actually going to take our kids and make money off of them playing foosball. But
yeah. Hey, you know what? Yeah, that's good.
Whatever works. But we have fun, and I'm very fortunate to have a wonderful wife and partner and three really great kids, and we do have a lot of shared interests, and that's just one awesome example of that. So we're blessed in that way. Yeah,
that's really awesome. That's really good to hear. Well, thank you so much for telling us a little bit about yourself and what you're doing now. I already prepped our audience some about how we're going to be focusing on the redemptive part of your story. And I just want to reemphasize, I'm so grateful that you're here to share. And I'm so grateful for the redemption and the healing that you've experienced throughout it. So I do, though, want to kind of allow you the space to give some background on where you, you know, how you grew up, what your experience was, and as much as you want to share about that, as I've said, only in the light of, you know, exposing the darkness so that we can appreciate the light and the goodness that's come from it. So anything that you, yeah, you want to explain?
Yeah. So my, my dad was actually a chaplain in the Navy, was ROTC after college, went into the military. After his first term of service, went into seminary, became a pastor, worked for civilian churches for a little while, then went back into the military as a chaplain. And he had already done all that by the time I was born. So we moved around a good bit, as a military family typically would. And that's an interesting process. It was obviously had its challenges, moving around a lot. In hindsight, it was actually, I think, a great thing. It created a lot of adaptability. I'm very happy with that. It created blocks of time that was sort of interesting, because when I talk about my experiences with child sexual abuse, and I'm sure we're going to get more into this, there was definitely a lot that took a while to figure out. And I'm sure there's a lot of people who know a lot more about the psychology of it than I do that could explain why that is. But there was definitely, it was definitely an ongoing situation where I knew things had happened, but couldn't concretely talk about them. There were sort of visual moments, couldn't place them. Mm-hmm. But moving around a lot did give me a block of, because I knew what locations we were in when that was happening. So that allowed me to say, okay, this is the time period that it was. And okay, for us, the time period, it was when we actually lived in Atlanta, the Atlanta area, for a little over a year. And that's where most of this took place. And that was when I was 9, 10 years old. So, Because the interesting thing about my experience, and I think this is true for a lot of people, is there something investigative about it, where because it's not so, it's a different type of memory and a different type of series of memories that, and you just have to eventually, I think part of the healing process is accepting that there are things that you're not going to quite know and remember. But that is one thing that is interesting about the process of moving around, is it did create these blocks of time. And this period when I was 9 and 10 years old, it was when I was sexually abused. It was ongoing. It was a group of older teenagers. And like I said, there were particular incidents that I remembered a little bit, remember more now. What really happened is about 6 or 7 years ago, some very concrete things came out where I didn't even realize that I had disclosed it and at the time, and that came out. And so that was when pieces started to fall together. Another interesting thing about my experience is in that same period when we lived in Atlanta, that's this block of time that I see this, all these experiences in. My mom was actually raped. Mm. She was working in the church that we were at the time, and just a stranger came in with a hammer and said, "Do what I tell you or I'm going to kill you." That was obviously a traumatic experience for her. Mm-hmm. That was a traumatic experience just because when you're that age and it is your mom, and there was, of course, a close relationship there, that did start to shape the worldview, which I think everything trauma is about that, mm-hmm. into a much darker space, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. It's also interesting, though, because all of that is very vivid to me. Like, mm-hmm. what the day it happened, there's very weird stuff that was going on. People from the church were showing up. She finally came home. She sat us down. She told us about it, which I think was a very smart. And I think she knew that that was probably the best way to handle it. All of that is very vivid to me. Everything after the fact related to the rape is very vivid to me. Just interesting to me that the other stuff that was happening, also related to sexual abuse and assault, mm-hmm. was not vivid. And mm-hmm. I don't know if that's, I think that's a natural thing. I could be overthinking it a bit, but I also wonder sometimes if that was a way for me to focus on something different than what was actually mm-hmm. happening. So
interesting.
So that's in broad strokes.
Yeah.
That's my story. And the fuzziness of everything, which I think probably most survivors can relate to at some point, also just creates a lot more questions because there's other incidents that you now have to sort of rethink, but mm-hmm. you don't really know. And I have, and I think I think a lot of this conversation is sort of about points of healing mm-hmm. that determines what those are. And I think one of those are, like I mm-hmm. said, is just accepting that there's just things you're not going to know. Mm-hmm. And you just have to deal with the reality that you do know and the ramifications of.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for giving us that background and explanation behind all of that.
Sure, yeah.
So that, like you getting to that healing, you know, that takes a process. Were there some like markers that you could explain in that uh-huh. you can remember? Is it kind of a more ongoing thing?
It's more of an ongoing thing. I mean, it is just, I am obviously in a good space now, not just mentally and emotionally, but also just in terms of this investigative side of it. Mm-hmm. Like I have a very strong creative side, I have a very strong practical side. And the practical side of me always wants to know what happened, what was the cause and effect, that sort of thing. That was missing for a long time. And that was in terms of understanding the trauma and the experiences. And so there was a long period of time where I would never have said I was a child sexual abuse survivor. Mm-hmm. I think if I was being honest or under like hypnosis or something like that, I would have. Uh-huh. But it was just not something that my subconscious would allow myself to be aware enough. Mm-hmm. And I do think that I think we're all very naturally creative and imaginative, no matter what industry you're in, the imagination creates vision for accomplishment. But I think that was definitely part of the process. All the work that I was doing in one way or the other was, in hindsight, dealing with the stuff that we're talking about. And a lot of it was sort of a spiritual approach to dealing with pain and trauma. Mm-hmm. I think it was my subconscious working itself out. So mm-hmm. those aren't defined markers. I think that was just a process.
Okay.
The markers were really about probably 6 or 7 years ago when other things were happening in my family, and that's when specific things came out that I did not really, I might not have admitted that I remembered, but I think I did. Mm-hmm. And again, there were always a few visions, a few memories that were very clear. Mm-hmm. It was just very easy to dismiss them because of the fuzziness related to them. Mm-hmm. So, but in that period of about 6 or 7 years ago, that was when it was finally, because it was things that were put right in front of me as part of this investigative process. And I use that term broadly. It's just the matter of thinking about it and putting the pieces together. That was when I was like, okay, yeah, this happened. And it is something that does have to be dealt with. Mm-hmm. And a good example of this is this project I'm working on now called The Purpose of Winter. Because it probably corresponded in terms of my internal development of the project with that period right before that 6 years ago and all through that 6 years where like it was originally not about child sexual abuse.
Okay.
But as any sort of creative process, storytelling process happens, you refine a lot. Mm-hmm. And as it was sanded down and as it was shaped out, that became clearly what this was about. Mm-hmm. So that is one of the things that my journey has been about is the creative process of understanding and dealing with trauma. And the process of coming up with the story and developing it is the perfect example of that. And mm-hmm. ironically, it's exactly what the movie is about. It wasn't intended that way. I think there's something that was very just sort of synergistic about it. But the movie is about an artist who experienced child sexual abuse, but did not, in much the same way as it is essentially my story, mm-hmm. did not really remembered in a way that allowed him to understand how mm-hmm. it was affecting him. And eventually his art leads them to that space. And obviously it's not coincidental mm-hmm. that that's representative of my story.
Right. Yes. And so that you're working on that project now before you have done The Warrior Road. And that is already out. And I don't know, what year was that?
We actually shot that in 2012. We went through post for a couple of years. Yeah.
Okay. And that is about what? Because I know that, is it kind of like a sequel?
So that's interesting. And that's a good example of exactly what we're talking about. Like Warrior Road definitely is a precursor to The Purpose of Winter. in the sense that it is dealing with mental health. It's about an 18-year-old guy in the waterlands of South Carolina who is dealing with depression, and he's a writer. And this is and there is this sort of subconscious device of a character that he meets that he then develops a backstory for that does become a process for the main character dealing with depression. Now, at the time, I would not have said that main character, Joseph, was dealing with these mental health challenges due to childhood trauma.
Okay.
Now I would. Again, it was the subconscious idea of like, okay, I know he's feeling this way because mm-hmm. I felt that way at this mm-hmm. age. I was not identifying where that was coming from.
Okay.
Now I think, and it doesn't affect the story. It's not what the story is about, to be 100% clear. Mm-hmm. But it was going a little deeper, and then Purpose of Winter goes significantly deeper.
Right.
I suppose you could say they do exist in the same universe. Mm-hmm. It's a precursor, and I learned a lot from Warrior Road, too. There was a lot of challenges to that story that I did not appreciate going into it, but I certainly learned along the way. Mm-hmm. And everything I've learned from that is being applied to the Purpose Winner. And a lot of that is about connecting with the audience. Like,
okay.
You know, one of the things that I'm really, that's really important to me in terms of storytelling is authenticity. And that can sometimes be to a fault because this is a movie, this isn't real life, you know, and you have to accept the difference and you have to accept the fact that audiences are going to connect to a movie in a different way than they are going to in real life. That's the whole point of a movie. Mm-hmm. So figuring out how to instill authenticity within that, especially when it comes to an issue like this. But I do think through making a lot of mistakes, I've learned how to do that. And I feel like Purpose and Winter will represent that.
Okay. Yeah, that's so good to hear. Because this whole journey and you kind of being a part of film and part of the processing kind of like your own stuff, has that been an outlet for you to heal from, or is it?
I would have to assume yes. Okay. Yeah. I mean, and that's not to be a cagey answer, but you never know what exactly, it's a lot of factors that are getting you to this point. And
right.
this is of course a path that you're always on. Mm-hmm. This is true for everybody. We all have anxieties. We all have depressive elements of ourselves. It's not just survivors of childhood trauma. So we're always just sort of living our lives in a way to be more content and be more constructive. So obviously this is just one part of a very long path
right.
that we're on all our lives. And because of that, it's hard to pinpoint it. But you are exactly right. I think there's no question that I was driven to tell stories because that was just a natural thing that I think we all do. It was such a part of who I am and who a lot of people are that it became the tool to deal with the subconsciousness. I mean, that is what story is. Like, story is a very visual connection. It's ways that we convey lessons and ideas in a way that's much more meaningful than just stating the lessons or ideas. It's deeper than that.
Yeah.
So, yes, there's no doubt that the process of figuring out what these stories are were a process of figuring out where these stories came from.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Yes. So in the process of making film and talking about like scenarios of trauma and the actors are experiencing this, are there ever times where like you or any of the other producers or actors in those films maybe have some experiences of, oh, wow, this reminds me a lot of what happened. And how do you, like, process that and cope with it as it comes?
This is a good question. The Purpose and Winter will be the first narrative project I've done that deals with this topic head on. So, but that is certainly a consideration that we have to take into mind. And that is becoming more of a consideration in the industry as a whole mm-hmm. in terms of having mental health counselors on set when it is dealing with heavy things, even not necessarily, you know, something as discomforting as child sexual abuse, but just any sort of heavy topics. Mm-hmm. There are more projects that are pretty mental health counselors on set when those things are being shot for the sake of cast and crew. And that is certainly something that is going to be a major consideration. One of the things that we're fortunate with The Purpose of Winter, but it's also designed this way, is having a lot of partners in that space. And as we get into more of the mechanics of production, right now we're just starting out and we're getting into financing. But as we go on and get more on boots on the ground, that is certainly something that we're going to be really, really considerate about.
Right. Yes. And so I know I've read over some of that, like the plan that you guys are partnering with local nonprofits. I think that we have been one that was part of the script writing process, some of our employees with that. And then Darkness to Light.
Yes, Darkness to Light, Dorchester Children's Center, and then some other groups. But yes, we have been fortunate enough to team up with experts and nonprofits in this space. And that was the initial conversation, which is, this is what we're doing. One of the many things that we want to accomplish with this is make sure that this is an authentic, constructive way to talk about the issue. And would you be interested in reading the script and give us thoughts about that? That's how we first connected with Dorchester Children's Center. And everybody has been very great with about that. And the script has developed significantly through that process, through the writing process in general, but that's certainly a big part of it.
So, yeah. So I know that there's, y'all are still, so you're in the, what phase did you say again?
We're in financing.
Okay.
Fundraising.
So there is opportunity. You're looking for some help in some things. Do you want to share some about
that? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, so we're, the way, and this is how I've always approached the work, because it's, my work in particular is not mainstream. There's not necessarily a large audience at face value for an independent drama about child sexual abuse. So we're very constructive and cost efficient. And so this is really about raising awareness on the issue. And this is where a cast can help with that as well. Any way we can raise the profile of the project, it just raises the profile of the message and raises the potential for outreach to other survivors. So cast is everything when it comes to movie. It's also an important component of that.
Absolutely. So how could people get connected if they're listening and want to be
Email me. I mean, I don't know if you can print my email address out or something like that.
I'll put your email in the show notes.
Okay, cool.
They can reach out to you directly. Yeah. Awesome. I also do want to touch on that you were, I don't know your exact role, you can clarify for me, but with the new Darkness to Light Stewards of Children training, that was really awesome. I just got retrained to be a facilitator of that. And I think the changes in it were really, really needed and awesome. I mean, I'm excited to start doing that training now. So I know that process was probably different for you as well, because that was a very direct, like, talking about this topic of childhood sexual abuse in a way of a lot of education and prevention. So can you tell me kind of like what that was like and some things that you maybe learned in that experience?
Yeah, no, and Darkness to Light, they're of course a great partner and a great organization. And I've been working with them for the last few years and very blessed with that. And yeah, so they needed to redo Stewards of Training, which is their sort of flagship project in terms of training all types of people who interact and deal with children on how to recognize, prevent, structure their organization so that there are not opportunities for child sexual abuse to happen. So we shot about 15 days on the Stewards of Children training videos. We interviewed, I think, about 30 survivors and also experts related to the issue. Now, of course, these were survivors that were selected because they had gone through a journey of healing and also were at the point where they were telling their stories on a pretty regular basis. So there was some comfort level in their readiness to do this. Still was a difficult thing. That was definitely an example. Our crew was small. This was basically a documentary style production. But everything you asked about in terms of working with people within this topic in a production and understanding how it might affect them is something that we definitely took into account. And that was largely by the lead of Darkness to Light. I would say it was not something I necessarily thought about going into it, because I was focused on the actual production, but it was definitely something that they were thinking about very heavily and completely, as soon as that discussion started, I understood it and was appreciative of it and appreciative of them of trying to make it happen. So like, for instance, the people who were doing the interviews were licensed therapists and they were doing they pre-interviewed everybody. They really sort of figure out comfort level, figure out a strategy with the interview subject. And this is especially key with survivors. And so that process was educational in the sense that, you know, really thinking about how it could affect people. Not that it's not something I was aware of, but again, there's a lot of other things that you're thinking about and considering as you go about. Now, it also worked out. It was very successful. We were fortunate to have a really great crew that was 100% behind it. And the Darkness to Light team, it was all a really great team and it all went smoothly. And yeah, I think they have been very effective and they've been getting a lot of awards for it. And that's been very fulfilling. That was the job side of it. The personal side of it, and when I first agreed to do the project, this was not in mind. But as I got closer to it, it did become clear that this was actually going to be something interesting for me as a survivor and as a survivor who's telling stories about survivorship.
Right.
Because I had never listened to 20 survivors talk about their stories and talk about how it affected them. And that was really what we were doing with these pretty intensive interviews. And it was good timing because it was definitely a place in my healing journey where I could hear it and it was not a difficult thing to deal with. It was something that I was actually very welcoming to. And one of the things that was most significant about it is how comparable all the stories were. The circumstances, of course, were very different. But the ramifications and some of the things that each of these survivors had dealt with was things that I had dealt with as well. And that not only was important to understand how the whole process works, it was also really important to take away a little bit of the solitude, because there is such, at least in my experience, and I would suspect that this is often true, I don't think there's any, it's so isolating. You're such an other, like you feel like when you're in a group of people, you feel like you're the only, you're different than everybody else. You don't, your perception, and this goes back to the idea of like perceiving things in a darker way. Everybody else seems very well put together. Everybody else seems very comfortable. I am not. There's nothing overtly different about me. There must be something fundamentally wrong about me. Wow. And that was really, and so then that becomes this very cyclic, self-fulfilling prophecy where you feel bad about yourself. You're not able to be a better version of yourself, and thus you feel bad about yourself again. So you're just going back and forth. Hearing all these other people with their similar experiences takes away from that, took that out a little bit. So that was a nice milestone, I would definitely say, you know, because you mentioned those milestones and I wasn't able to give you a lot of them, but I would certainly say that that was one of them.
Yeah. Sounds like it. I'm sure that would have been a really powerful time for everyone to kind of come together and see that they're not alone and that this is more common than most people think. We know Darkness to Light statistic, 1 in 10 children experience sexual abuse before they're 18. So definitely not alone, but it makes sense that you would feel as so.
Especially when it's in these formative years. You know, that's the key thing too. When you're trying to find yourself.
Right.
And, you know, because like 9, 10, so really, and then that was, and then my mom's rape happening at the same time. Then you're getting into teenagerhood and it's, and that's when you're wanting to define yourself. And if that becomes the definition, it definitely had a lot of tangential, rooted insecurities and self-esteem issues. Another interesting thing about my family is that there was definitely a history of depression going way back. So I think that that was going to exist no matter what. I think that also affected the way that my parents might've been equipped to handle all of this that was going on, which I'm completely forgiving and accepting of. So, you know, part of what that is to say is that no matter what sort of childhood you have, we're all going to have mental health challenges. Mm-hmm. I think in this instance, it was compounded mm-hmm. by the trauma.
Makes sense. Yeah. So in your, you know, we talked a lot about how film and sharing stories has been such a large part of the healing process. Can you identify any like people or organizations or coping skills too within that that you've experienced and that have really helped aid in this process of healing?
Yeah, no, that's an interesting, yes, I can. And, you know, one of the other concepts that I had never really thought about until the Darkness to Light project was the idea of points of light. Mm-hmm. And people who you encounter along the way that, especially in contrast to everything else, represent this goodness and this re-understanding of the potential for the world to be a kind, nurturing mm-hmm. place. All the way from college on, like even with some challenges that still saw something in me and developed deep relationships with me. And also in my production community, I have a lot of very good friends that I work with on a professional level, but they're also personal friends. I mean, production is a pretty intense business and you do develop some close relationships. And I couldn't even there, as I'm sitting here thinking about it, there's a lot of those and I couldn't even name them all. So
yeah.
I won't even try, but like, yes, I am very fortunate
awesome.
To have those relationships and that support. And like these are also people that are going above and beyond to work on the projects and, mm-hmm. and they're doing it for me. And I know that. And so mm-hmm. That's a very specific collaboration on my journey. And I mean, I mentioned my wife, she definitely is she's very different. We're similar in a lot of ways. We're different in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. She has not had to deal with some of the challenges that I have had to deal with. And that's a really good contrast. And so having that type of constant support, she's just she's an incredible partner. And then the organizations like Darkness, like Dorchester Children's Center, the only, it's funny because my journey has been very internal. That's more of the way I operate more independently, and that might have been a result of it, but it is what it is, you know, mm-hmm. like that, whether it's nature or nurture.
Story.
Exactly. Yeah. That's like that, like this is where I think the creative process and the storytelling has been such a big part of my healing process, where that is something that that's an internal relationship that I have. Mm-hmm. Externalizing therapy has not always been something that's been very effective for me. But one of the most effective things I've done was cognitive processing therapy mm-hmm. at Dorchester Children's Center. Mm-hmm. And that was that when I first was speaking to them about the project, it was something that they had offered. And I found very intriguing. And that also goes to the practical side of me and like really identifying behaviors, identifying things, and identifying best constructive reactions to them. So that was definitely a big support.
Okay. And was that the trauma therapy that you'd done since
it was the first childhood? Trauma therapy, to my parents' credit, because, you know, my dad was a chaplain. My mom actually a licensed mental health counselor. We did do family therapy after her rape.
Okay.
I'm just going to be honest. I don't think it was, this goes back to like ability and mindset at the time. I don't think that it was very constructive. I think it was a little bit of going through the motions. Mm-hmm. In high school is where I really had some very strong depression. The timing obviously is very much connected to the child sexual abuse. And there was therapy then, but it was still, I mean, I wouldn't say it was useless, but it was not terribly productive, but it was also not addressing the trauma. It was just, it was just addressing the idea of depression in general.
So it wasn't trauma-informed.
It was not trauma-informed, yeah.
So it sounds like that's what was really needed, and the timing of it. You seem to have been then ready to...
That's a great point. I mean, it was the timing of it. Yeah, what would have happened if it had been trauma-informed? Now, mm-hmm. I mean, I have to take responsibility for it because I was not disclosing anything at that moment.
Mm-hmm. Which is common.
Sure. And like,
it usually takes longer.
And it's interesting. I mean, I would think today, and I could be wrong, and you would know better, like, what a therapist in that situation be a little bit more proactive about prodding, or because it's understood?
I don't know.
I don't know.
It would probably depend the therapist, but I think that they're going to be pretty cautious of that. It's all what the client wants to talk about and disclose. If that's been disclosed, like children and adults that have had experiences of childhood trauma that we see here, we know that they've had it. So they might be a little bit more keen on talking about it because it's already open, out in the open. But it's probably going to be something that would be that person's choice.
And that's fair. You know, and like also, like, I mean, this is memory and it's however many years ago. Like, I don't know that I would have been able to talk about it, that I was ready to talk about it. And so I do certainly appreciate the therapist's position where, like, you know, that it does have to be the person who's going to probably initiate that. But because I don't think I was ready, or at least was not able to at that point, that might have affected my relationship with therapy, because mm-hmm. it didn't feel constructive, because it wasn't getting to what, even though I couldn't recognize was the root of it.
Right.
And so that's probably why that could have been one of the reasons that, you know, I took the process to be more internal. But I do think that's just my nature. Like, you know, I'm a very spiritual person. Obviously have a religious background when it comes to my family, as my wife does as well. Mm-hmm. But like my relationship with any religion, of course, raised Christian, was it didn't quite make sense to me. The relationship I had with God, or whatever you want to call it, was more direct in the context of a church and a church service, didn't quite work for me. So I do think that's sort of representative of what I'm talking about in terms of like a more direct internal relationship with spirituality. Okay. And I think that this healing journey, at least for me, is a spiritual journey. Mm-hmm. I would imagine in some way it's that way for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Creates meaning too, of this wasn't just purposeless and I can heal and I can redeem in this.
Yeah, absolutely. And it does it in a way that I think is real, you know, mm-hmm. because some people who might be a little more secular have more cynical ways of looking at it. Mm-hmm. But you can't go through this process, and whether it be just a way to accept and befriend the trauma or the way to accept and befriend the trauma, without recognizing that the conflict that it is did result in us being different, mm-hmm. and being in a way that was the way we were intended to be. Even though it does feel, it's complex in the way that spirituality and religion is, in that it doesn't make sense, mm-hmm. but the result does. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get what you're saying for sure. And definitely we're looking into getting into the spiritual side of healing as well, and offering that at the Child Advocacy Center. So I'm grateful for you sharing that side of it and kind of seeing the complete healing process that's needed. It's a lot of different aspects and people and organizations that come together mm-hmm. for that. So if you had to like speak directly for a minute to a survivor of childhood sexual abuse, what is something that you would want them to hear from you? Maybe that you wish you could have heard when you were a little bit younger, or would just, be encouraging to them?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I guess probably one of the most helpful things is going to be kind of bland, but just that it's on your time and it's on your understanding. I think it's difficult to tell somebody how to specifically do it. Mm-hmm. And I know that's not what you're asking, mm-hmm. but that's certainly
that's a good point.
But it's a tendency that we would want to do. We want to give a solution. You know, I mean, I think it is interesting that, as I understand it, most adult survivors of child sexual abuse don't disclose until late in life, if at all. Like it is definitely, and that's been my experience, that's been my process. I guess this is what I would say, is that if you feel like something might have happened, there's a good chance it did. Mm. And it is such a weird, confusing, and yes, traumatic experience that it probably has affected you. Mm-hmm. And that it is well worth really considering what that might have been in whatever way works for you.
Great. Yeah, that's spot on. I really appreciate that wisdom and sharing that. It feels just very open and inviting, which I think is super needed in situations like this. So anything else? Any last final thoughts that you want to share?
No, I not really. I appreciate the conversation. I appreciate that time. As we talked about going into this, this is not this sort of structure of the conversation is something that I am just starting to do. So yeah. I appreciate the opportunity to do it. And, you know, as the purpose of Winter gets made, you know, it will represent, I think, the most effective way of conveying the story and connecting the survivors in the way we just spoke about. But I also have to be prepared to have these conversations in the longer audience as well.
So as it starts to be produced and people start watching and everything.
Yeah. And that, because that's just going to, I mean, for lack of a better term, just authoritatively, you know, like, and so this is an opportunity to practice that. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm really, really grateful for you sharing and just super grateful for your wisdom and all the ways that you've grown and learned through this. I think the not only purpose of Winter, but your entire life is going to make an impact on a lot more survivors and just people in general working in this field and that want to help and that want to be a part of the healing that can be possible. So it's inspiring.
Well, I appreciate the heck out of that. And that does actually, just to tag it with one more thing, we're all a mess too. Like, I should be really clear. Like, I mean, this for whatever reason, I'll be totally honest, this week had, I don't know what the trigger was, but I've had like had depressive days all week. So that's another thing. I think part of this otherness is we feel like we look at other people and be like, oh, they've got their crap together. They don't. We're all a mess. We're all a mess. There's no otherness when it comes to that. Yeah. So like just feeling empowered and like you're not having to battle something that other people aren't.
Right.
Yeah.
Very good point.
And you're able to do it. I believe that's the case for all of us.
Yeah, I do too. Well, thank you so much, Brad. I'm going to put your email in the show notes and I'll put some other resources as well, just for survivors of childhood trauma, resource they can reach out to if they feel that they need to. But thank you again. And I look forward to watching The Purpose of Winter when it comes out. We'll definitely be sharing that kind of stuff and keeping up with you on that. I can't wait.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to my conversation with Brad Jane. He is a very humble guy, but let me just tell you that his work is top notch. I've become familiar with some of it preparing for this interview, and let me just say that you definitely don't want to miss The Purpose of Winter. We'll be keeping you updated with some of that information on social media, but I'm so certain that's going to be an incredibly powerful film production. Brad's voice in the film industry is so amazing. I'm so, so glad that he's there and that he's creating a difference with his voice in a thing that he enjoys and loves as a creative outlet on his healing journey. I'm certain that you gleaned some wisdom from his experience of healing as a survivor of childhood sexual abuse. I've included Brad's email as well as his website and a link to follow for The Purpose of Winter preview. He will be so happy if you reach out. So if you have any questions or anything that you'd like to ask him, please do. And lastly, if you enjoyed this episode, I'd love for you to follow our channel. Leave a star rating so that more people can hear about the podcast. As we've learned and Brad emphasized, it takes a lot of people and organizations and help for survivors to find their paths to hope, healing, and empowerment, which is why we want to keep growing our team. Our final episode, I Can't Believe It, of the Summer of Survivors mini-series is coming to a close next month with our last survivor we'll be talking to, who has an incredibly bold and powerful voice, which you'll find out that I mean that voice quite practically, on August 8th. We'll keep fighting together.